You're listening to Dialogue from Illinois Soul. I'm Reginald Hardwick, Illinois Public Media News and Public Affairs Director. Dialogue is an exchange about culture straight from the soul. A new financial literacy program in Urbana aims to help residents with basic financial skills. The program is free for Urbana residents ages 21 to 64. IPM Student Newsroom's Diana Jung has more.
The free online course is offered in partnership with the Suu Kyi Charitable Foundation. Bavong Joseph is the director of corporate partnerships in the Midwest region. He says the course is self-paced and designed to make financial knowledge as accessible as possible.
We wanted it to be mobile-friendly, people on the go. You know, you're coming home on the bus or driving, whatever, and you're able to like quickly pull it up.
The course covers topics like understanding budgeting, debit, and credit. The website also has tools to help people manage their finances and build strong credit profiles. I'm Diana Jung, IPM News.
A new approach in Urbana is helping more students learn to read. In the school district's first through fourth grade classes, the number of students whose reading skills are well below grade level has decreased. Superintendent Jennifer Ivory Tatum told the school board that's because of a new language arts and literacy curriculum.
We have a evidence-based science of reading curriculum now where for years and years and years, teachers had their own choice of how they were teaching certain standards through our priority standards that we gave them.
The curriculum is part of a national movement towards teaching kids to read the way researchers suggest, like spending more time teaching them to sound out words. Urbana fifth graders were the exception to the trend. The district wants to learn why and is sending more staff to supplement class for kids who need extra support. University of Illinois Soybean Innovation Lab nearly shut down earlier this year after the Trump administration cut USAID funding. The lab here in central Illinois benefited African nations. An anonymous donation helped the lab continue with limited staff. And IPM Student Newsroom's Stephanie Oriana reports additional funding could be on the way.
Lab leaders say they're awaiting final approval for a $1.5 million grant from a research foundation. The money will help them expand their efforts to increase the number of soybean varieties available to African nations. Julia Paniago is the product lead of the Soybean Innovation Lab. She says giving countries more soybean varieties will improve local economies.
The local community will get more money. The industry will produce more. The poultry, the meat industry, all the industry will develop.
The lab hopes to register 10 to 15 soybean varieties by 2027. I'm Stephanie Oriana, IPM News.
In many parts of Nigeria, funerals are often huge celebrations of life, but they can also involve some painful and unwelcome demands. NPR's Emmanuel Okumuntu experienced just that at the recent burial of his grandfather.
My grandpa, Augustine Bolaji Banjoko, was 91 when he passed away a few months ago at his home in the southwestern Nigerian city of Ibadan. He had 7 children and 16 grandchildren, and he died peacefully, surrounded by his family. He lived a full and long life, and in Yoruba tradition, we are to miss him, but not mourn him. So his burial was a festival. And over 2 days, we danced and danced. A band of pallbearers were in full groove, twirling with the coffin hoisted on their shoulders. They led a large parade through the streets of his neighborhood, from the mortuary to his home, while a band with trumpets and talking drums played renditions of gospel songs and hymns. Later that evening, we held a service of songs under a canopy outside his home, full of moving tributes, including from his eldest child, my mom.
Baba mi, baba je onirele yo.
Then we partied late into the night again. But throughout the festivities, there was a slow drumbeat of greed and exploitation, intruding into the celebrations like uninvited guests. Funerals can bring out the best and the worst in people, which affected many of us, but particularly my mom, Antonia Banjoko, Akimotu.
My mind was all over the place already. I couldn't think. It wasn't nice at all.
It came to a head on the day of the burial, right at the entrance of my grandpa's village. A group of young men blocked the road. They'd heard about the funeral, and they were waiting.
We got to the entrance. They blocked it. Number one, why are you blocking us from coming into this village?
We weren't allowed in unless we, quote, settled them first.
And they were like, oh, yeah, we have to pay for the community. We haven't done anything to develop the community. For me to be paying you to bring my dad's body into the village he was born and bred.
Then another obstacle, this time from the church itself, where the ministers were waiting outside.
They pulled me and like, the envelopes that we prepared.
The church had told us we had to give each of their ministers a cash gift before the service could begin.
That what are we going to do for the church? Maybe we can do the sealing of the church because there is a leak. Or maybe we can buy you a motorcycle. Oh, you've seen the state of the church. Maybe there is something you can do to uplift it.
But what followed was even more painful. As the final hymns and rites began, and the coffin about to be lowered into the grave, a representative for the village chief suddenly pulled my mum aside. He said we had to see the chief before the burial continued, to pay respect and to pay him his dues too.
I came to bury my dad. I had to try and blank my mind because at that point, I could snap. I lost that moment where I needed to say my final goodbye to my dad.
What we went through is far from rare in Nigeria, where funerals can be seen by some groups as opportunities for profit. This dynamic becomes even more intense when families from the city make rare returns to their villages. My grandpa's funeral ended on a high. We held the reception in a large hall draped in white and gold. The party was overflowing with food and drinks, and like many Nigerian celebrations, it featured an impressive range of souvenirs, mugs, notebooks, towels, Tupperware, printed with my grandpa's image and messages like, "Celebration of an icon." The highs and lows of the funeral were tough, but a guiding light was that we were honoring his final wishes. He wanted to be buried wearing the traditional clothes he wore when he married my grandma.
That was 60 years ago. It's not good anymore, but he still dry cleaned it.
And he wanted to be buried in his village and laid to rest beside his mom. Emmanuel Akinwotu, NPR News, Ibadan.
You're listening to Dialogue from Illinois Seoul. I'm Reginald Hardwick. While Black Americans have always been avid consumers of news, they are only a fraction of the U.S. population, and many have financial constraints that limit their spending on something that might not be seen as a necessity. But there are journalists and entrepreneurs working to overcome those barriers. Ashley Allison is among them. She is a former Obama White House advisor and the founder of Watering Hole Media. Last week, she bought the online media outlet The Root, which focuses on covering Black news and opinion. Ashley recently spoke with NPR's Michelle Martin.
Many people might know that there have been historically Black newspapers that have always played an important role in the life of this country. Some people might be familiar with something like Ebony and Jet magazines, which were owned by Johnson Publishing. Those were also very important sort of outlets in their day. The Root was founded in 2008 by Donald Graham, who was then chairman of the Washington Post Company, and Henry Louis Gates Jr., who is people may know him from, you know, Finding Your Roots. He's a, you know, Harvard scholar and media figure. What was The Root meant to do that these other outlets did not do or don't do?
So let's rewind in our mind, right, in that moment of time, 2008, the election of Barack Obama, the first Black president. And that campaign really used social media, digital media platforms to connect to a piece of the electorate that sometimes felt like they were left aside from mainstream media. And the whole purpose was to bring news to Black audiences through a digital media platform. And it was extremely successful in its founding. So you had people who were legal scholars, political experts, financial forecasters, entertainment critics, the creme de la creme of Black academia, of Black culture. And it really was a microcosm of what it was like, the Black experience was like in 2008.
So The Root has changed ownership several times since it was founded in 2008. But in 2015, Graham Holdings sold it to Univision. And then in 2019, it changed hands again, went to a company that used to be called Gawker, now GO Media. Has something been lost with the change of hands, in your view?
Well, I think every owner has a vision for what they want the publication to be, including myself. So I can't really speak to what those folks wanted to do, but I know in this moment, we look at this platform as an opportunity not just to tell Black stories and talk about the Black experience in this country. It also, the reason why people keep wanting to buy this outlet is because it is a successful outlet that can thrive in this economy. But I really think that there is an opportunity now.
This is a moment of intense pressure and scrutiny on media companies. I mean, I'm curious if you have thought about that and how you plan to address that.
I think anyone that works in journalism has thought about that, but it cannot deter us from standing in truth and facts. We want to be rooted in data, we want to be rooted in science, and we want to be rooted in the truth and facts. There is a place for commentary and opinions for sure, but all of that commentary, we will not be a site that pushes mis and disinformation. We just have to stand and draw a line in the sand.
So what is your benchmark of success?
Well, we want our readers to continue to engage in our writing, in our video. We want to not just be an online publication, but we also want to be an offline publication. We have done other in-person activations, but we want to actually go into community and talk to people and engage with people. And most importantly, when people look at The Root, I want it to do what it did for me, give you a blueprint to be aspirational and inspirational and know that anything is possible, even if you haven't already encountered it, but you can see it because you can see it in The Root.
Ashley Allison is a media executive and former White House advisor, and since last week, the owner of the Black media outlet, The Root. Ashley Allison, congratulations. Thank you so much for joining us. Keep in touch and let us know how it's going.
Thank you so much.
According to the Pew Research Center, less than 7% of construction firms in America are Black-owned. But if you've ever been to the Wintrust Arena, Malcolm X College, or the Marriott Marquis Hotel, all in Chicago, you've been to a project in which the oldest Black-owned construction company had a hand. McKissick & McKissick was founded in 1905. It is still a family-owned business run by Cheryl McKissick Daniel, who recently published a book called The Black Family Who Built America. Cheryl recently talked with Kai Rizdahl of America Public Media's Marketplace program.
There is a lot in this book about your family, less so, I think, about you. Would you just, so we all have some ground truth here, tell us how you wound up in this job?
How did I wind up in this job? I was born into it, okay? My family was not playing about the fifth generation. And when I was a little girl, my father would give me train sets and Leroy lettering sets and T-squares and made sure that I was on a trajectory to be an architect or an engineer to be a part of this business.
Sounds like you kind of didn't have a choice.
Not a choice at all. No questions asked. They also selected where I went to college. So
To get the plug in here, Howard University, right?
Howard University. My father would tell me growing up, you can go anywhere you want to college, but I'm only paying for Howard University.
That's a good way to do it, right? There are listeners to this program who will know the work you have done, some of which I recited up in the introduction, but don't know the firm, McKissick and McKissick. Would you tell us how this firm came to be and why it is so important to you?
Absolutely. You know, I love the way you started that people will know the structures that we have built but they won't know who built it because that's how we operate. And so, you know, the question is, every time you walk into any structure whatsoever, the question should be, if you like it, who built this? And so I want to say we did, the McKissicks. We are a fifth generation design and construction firm that dates back to 1790. And so today we are a family that is the first Black licensed architect in America, with my grandfather and his brother with license 117 and 118 in the state of Tennessee. We have built across the north and southeast of this country, and we've had the opportunity now to work on some of the most iconic projects in New York City, most notably the new World Trade Center, along with JFK Terminal 1 and LaGuardia Airport.
Obviously, when you're talking about a lineage that this company has, going back as far as it has to your enslaved ancestors, legacy matters. But I guess the question is, how do you frame that legacy of being a woman-run now, Black-owned family business in a day and in a time where that can be a little challenging in this economy right now?
Yes. Well, if you think it's challenging now, just think back at slavery and Jim Crow. And this company has made it through. You know, the probability of passing a business down to the second generation is about 45%. Hmm. And then to pass a business down to a third generation is 18%. And so, yes, right now there is this undercurrent out there that wants to, you know, terminate DEI programs, and they want to terminate our history. But that's exactly why this book is important. Black excellence has always been there. It's just people haven't seen it for what it is. There are still people out there interested in our stories, interested in working with us, as was the days right after slavery.
Let me get you back to where we started, legacy and what this company means five generations on. You say you didn't have a choice in joining this company. Your dad kind of made that clear. You have two daughters. Are you confident about the sixth generation? Because that's got to be like tenths of a percent.
Well, I am getting ready to institute what my father institutes, make sure they don't have a choice. I think they're catching on. I think this book has been very helpful for them to be able to see that they can chart their own destiny by owning their own company, stepping into a business that would, for them, be sixth generation is quite unusual and would give them notoriety they wouldn't have. And you know, young people, all they want is to be a celebrity. So I try to use that angle a lot with them. And so I think that there's a strong possibility there. Let me put it like that. It's not set in stone.
Fair enough.
But it's a strong possibility.
Fair enough. Cheryl McKissick-Daniel is the CEO of McKissick & McKissick. But more to the point for our purposes today, she's got a book out. It's called The Black Family Who Built America, The McKissicks, Two Centuries of Daring Pioneers. Ma'am, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
This is great. Thank you.
That's all for this week's show. Dialogue is produced by Kennedy Vincent and me, Reginald Hardwick. Lamont Holden composed our theme. Dialogue and Illinois Soul are part of Illinois Public Media, a service of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We'll talk with you again next week.
Illinois Public Media News. This is who we are. Central Illinois is our home and our focus. From Champaign County's most listened to newscasts and conversations that bring the state together. The future will bring changes, but it won't change who we are. Illinois Public Media News on WILL AM and IPMNewsroom.org.